BBC Six Music Podcasts.
Six Music.
This is a free download from the BBC.
Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.
And now, Adam and Joe.
Well, that's it for me, though, isn't it? It's just those two bits. You get all the fun parts.
That was like the supposed to be the Doctor Who theme.
Yeah.
Is it that? But is that still the theme? I don't really watch Doctor Who on account of it. Yeah, I don't really watch it.
Yeah.
But is that still the theme?
It must be. I mean, if that wasn't the theme, they would be absolute morons. They'd be throwing out the best theme ever.
That's what the castle love to do.
It's true, isn't it?
They love to throw things out in a slop bucket over the back of the castle wall.
It's the favourite trick of geniuses all over the world, isn't it? Once you get something absolutely 100,000% right...
Kill it.
Kill it, get rid of it.
Change it.
Get some morons in to rebrand it and go from there.
That's how the world keeps turning.
I don't think they've done that with Doctor Who, though. I think that's still the theme. And that wasn't necessarily... I mean, I think that has been suggested by people in the past.
We're even suspicious that we might have done that before.
Yeah. I mean...
Short-term memory loss.
You know, today was show number 90.
Really?
Yeah, we've done 90 shows at Six Music.
Really? Including our breakfast cover when we started?
No, not including those.
That is a lot of waffle.
Yeah.
That's a lot of chottle.
I mean, that is an absolutely huge amount of waffle.
A huge oil tanker full of old boobs.
That is more waffle than is necessarily...
Old boobs? I use that in the sort of 50 sense of the word boobs.
Right.
You stupid boob.
Hey, you
that
boob.
Kind of thing. That
Come
kind of
on,
thing, yeah.
What are you doing, you big boob helmet,
exactly.
man? You nipple. Look at you.
You nipple.
Yeah, I'm using
yeah,
the old 50
nipple.
Sense of nipple. Come on, you nipples, guys, boob helmet man. What are you doing, jack freak? Look at you. You bum wipe head.
Hey, that's going too far.
That's what they said in the 50s,
the
isn't it?
The 50s. It was such an amazing time. Such an amazing time.
It was a time of excitement and promise. And everyone smoked. If you watch Mad Men, you'll find out. You don't watch episodic TV, so you wouldn't know. But
I don't.
They all smoked cigs, one after the other.
Mm.
Excuse me, would you mind putting out that cigarette? I find it offensive.
I'm Larry.
Is that Larry?
Larry David.
Clark. Larry David. Yeah.
Oh, it's so offensive if I do this, is it? But it's not offensive if you smoke!
Et cetera, et cetera.
I'm glad I don't watch that.
You're killing me slowly!
Sorry.
Hey, this is Adam and Joe. Welcome to our podcast, the highlights of... The highlights? Yeah, the kind of best bits, comparatively speaking, of our Six Music show on BBC Six,
it's more
Music,
like
Six
the,
Music.
It's more like the absolute worst bits removed.
Yes. The filleted version of our Six Music show that occurs live between 9 a.m. and noon every Saturday on BBC Six Music.
It occurs live.
Yeah, it's occurring.
It's like occurring.
Yeah, what's occurring, man?
So why don't we get on with it and shove it down the listeners' ear holes?
Good idea.
Is that too aggressive?
Not at all. I'll help you push it down there. 3, 2, 1.
This is a big British castle podcast with some talk. The Adam and Joe Show Radiogram. You can listen to it while you're on your way to work, and when you get there you can listen on the loo. How do you do?
Hi, listeners. It's Adam Buxton here.
Hi, listeners. It's Joe Cornish here.
You taking the mic out of the way I said that?
No, I like the way you said it.
Hi, listeners.
Hi, listeners. Adam and Joe here. Hi.
Hi, diet tips.
Now, do be very careful with your five a day.
Do be very careful with your five a day. Make up later, make over later on.
Make up and over later on. Hi.
This is Adam and Joe on BBC Six Music. Welcome to the show, listeners. It's quite early on a quite miserable Saturday morning down
quite
here
miserable.
In London.
How did you cope with the clocks going back last weekend? Did you
I
remember?
All right, yeah, I did. I got up an hour early the next morning.
Right.
It was a bit traumatising, but it was good. It was fine.
I was in a shop on the Saturday evening. And I had no clue that the clocks were going back. But I overheard a guy at the counter saying, clock's going back tonight. Extra hour in bed tomorrow morning. So I thought, yeah, good one. But then I was thinking, I think he's got that wrong. I think the clocks go forward in the winter time, don't they? And you get an hour less in bed. Because isn't the point to shift the daylight hours later into the evening, I was thinking. I mean, my mind was all scrambled. Obviously, that's not the point, and I'm a moron. And so the next morning, I put all the clocks forward and I forced everyone out of bed an hour early because I'm so
really
confused.
Well, it is tricky. It's weird how even after many years on the planet Earth, it's still a confusing thing, isn't it?
I was trying to like imagine the daylight in my head like as a area of black and white with the white daylight hours in the middle and that white band shifting forward and
what?
This is what was going on. It was a mess in my mind.
You're right? That's Russell Crowe in A Beautiful Mind.
I'm totally...
Or the guy in The Soloist. If there was a film, lots of stuff would like appear on the screen around your head.
That's right.
With Philip Glass music playing.
Except I've not got any discernible talent like the people
except
in those
films. Except it would just
films.
Be a woman's bottom and a sausage roll. Circling slowly.
Where would the sausage roll end up? It doesn't matter. And the thing is that I'm just totally out of sync with the universe. At the moment, you know what I mean? I feel like every morning I wake up and the universe just goes, oh God, it's that jerk. It's that little jerk.
I think you're flattering yourself that the universe cares about either of us.
It does. It listens to the podcast.
Does it?
Yeah.
Is it Black Squadron?
No, the universe doesn't listen live.
Oh.
It's too busy.
Oh.
But it downloads the podcast on a Monday evening.
Cool.
And listens to that.
Nice, nice.
Adam was just showing me a little video there, weren't you?
Yeah, we went to Centre Parks this week for the half term, me and my family. And on the first day, it was a little bit rainy, so we mainly gravitated indoors, did the swimming bit, which was fantastic, all the lubes and tubes.
And lubes?
So are they called?
Don't think so.
You have a lube to go in the tube, right? Otherwise you get stuck.
Do you? I'm not sure you do, but anyway, it's fine.
That's how it works. They grease you down, shoot you down the tube. That's not true. We went into the arcade and they had one of those machines there where you go in and it's like a photo booth and you take three shots of yourself and whoever you're with. And then they create a little video for you by just inserting your face over some...
Do they lube your face
computer
first?
Computer animate. Obviously your face is lubed first, yeah. Otherwise it'd be irresponsible. So you pay £3 and you get the most absolutely useless DVD that doesn't play on any conventional computer known to man. I was able to extract the movie file from
£3 is quite cheap.
You reckon?
They could have pushed that to £10.
I mean, in the olden days, when we went to the arcade, right, you could go with a bag of tenpenny pieces and have fun for a whole afternoon. Do you remember that, though? I mean, a game of Space Invaders was 10p, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, when things started, like when Dragon's Lair came out, and that cost 50p, I remember that was like, whoa,
yeah,
50p, you're joking. But it was all computer animation and stuff. So you dealt with it. But it was still quite a smack in the teeth. Now...
Hey, I've got to correct you there. It's traditional cell animation. It's Don Bluth, Dragon's Lair. But it played off a Laserdisc. That was the exciting thing.
Right. Good correction.
Thanks, man.
Thanks very much.
We've got to do it when we can.
Yeah, exactly.
Got to get the facts right when we can.
Hi, this is a sexy woman, and you're listening to the highlights of the Adam and Joe BBC Six Music show. Ooh, this podcast has got me so hot. I'm too hot. I'm going to have to sit down and take off my cardigan. Ooh, I'm boiling.
I was talking a little bit earlier about the fact that I got confused with the clocks going back last weekend. Thought maybe they went forward. And some people have helpfully emailed and texted in some mnemonics, which the main one being spring back, fall forward. Right? Is that how you remember?
Mm. It's a little distracting in here, listeners, because they're doing a fire alarm test. Two quite authoritative men came in, didn't they?
Yeah.
Said, don't worry, we're going to do the fire alarms. The lights will flash. You won't hear anything. It will last for a few minutes.
So there's all sorts of lights flashing and stuff.
But we can hear something.
What's that?
It's the fire alarm, right? It's quite scary.
I thought it was a baby crying. Or Lucy, our assistant, crying.
It's like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre sound.
It sounds like someone's telling someone off.
Do you remember that sound in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre? Sort of weird metal creak.
Listen.
Anyway, sorry, it's quite hard to concentrate, listeners.
Yeah. So anyway, mnemonics, right?
Yeah.
What's the mnemonic for when
spring
the
forward, fall back. That's what people are suggesting. Spring forward, fall back.
But
Count Buckley's can't deal with that mnemonic.
Well, I pointed
out. You were instantly dismissive of it. No.
You can quite easily say spring back, fall forward. I mean, both of those are sort of phrases as well, aren't they?
Yeah, you think it doesn't purchase in your brain?
No, no. And also, the other one that I get similarly confused with is feed a cold, starve a fever, you know?
Never heard that one before.
It's what you're supposed to do when like, if you've got a if you're feeling feverish, is it a good thing to eat? Or are you better off if you just abstain from food for a while? So, like, do you feed a cold? Like, if you've got a cold, it's a good thing. Or do you starve the fever? Or do you feed the fever and starve the cold? It works either way.
No wonder you're so confused. You're being over-analytical.
The universe hates me.
Do they think? It loves you. It downloads the podcast.
Yeah, I know. The universe doesn't.
So that's not a good enough mnemonic, listeners, for Count Buckley's spring forward, fall back.
I like the way you say mnemonic, like Gary Mnemonic.
It won't fit in his head. We've got to think of a better one.
Watch out is another little bit. It might be wicked. It might be one of the weaker bits. But that's cool. I like weaker bits. I can handle up to three.
Hey, it's Adam and Joe here on quite a disappointing morning weather-wise, I would say.
Do you cycle in this weather, Adam?
Sure, I'm not a fair weather cyclist.
Me too, I cycled in this rain. It's quite invigorating, actually, I find.
You reckon?
Yeah, but my shorties are a bit damp, so I've hung them up over the emergency lights. Is that safe?
Yeah, well, it's nice. It stops us noticing if there's a fire.
If there's a fire, yeah, just blissful ignorance.
You know, if there was a fire, your shorts would dry that much quicker.
Exactly.
So everyone wins.
Yeah. Win-win.
Which is nice. But no, I don't like cycling in the rain particularly much.
Don't you?
No.
I find it invigorating.
Do you?
Schwa!
It's getting a spritz. Nature's spritz.
I like to shake my head and all the water flies off.
Do you sing and stuff while you're cycling?
I open my mouth and drink in the rain.
Unbutton a few...
I do sing while I'm cycling, yeah.
Unbutton your shirt a little bit and...
Oh, definitely.
Let the rain
just
go
enjoy,
down.
I let go and just enjoy getting all wet.
Chest and... Yeah. Right. I'm getting a little bit turned on. So, folks, last weekend I was listening with my family in the car to Weekend Woman's Hour, which is something I enjoy doing very much. My favourite presenter was doing it, Jane Garvey. I prefer
this
Jane
is on
Garvey.
Radio 4. Yeah.
Yeah. I prefer Jane Garvey to the other lady that does Woman's
Marcus
Hour.
Marcus Garvey.
Yeah, that's right. I like Jane better. She's got a really nice voice. She seems like someone I might get on with.
Not supposed to listen to Woman's Hour.
Why not?
Because it's for women's.
I'm interested in women's. I want to get inside their minds before I get inside their dresses. I was hoping you'd stop me before I said that.
Well, I'm glad you said dresses. Keep talking, though.
Anyway, they were talking about, they had a little segment on the amount of television that children watch, right? And whether it's a good thing or a bad thing.
What a hot potato.
It's a hot one.
Top topic.
And they got a couple of experts on, a lady from the BFI Educational Department.
Schwa.
She was poo-pooing the notion that watching a great deal of telly and playing on computers is necessarily bad for the mind. And then they had a lady who said... you've got to watch it because it's going to rot those little minds. And she was even saying that children between up until the age of three should not be allowed to watch TV at all. And she said that in France and Australia and stuff, they're trying to get legislation passed to stop, although I don't know how it would work, to stop children, you know, to make it illegal for children under the age of three to watch TV. Can that be right? Or did I misunderstand in the way that I often do? But they had some very endearing clips of children from South Yorkshire talking about the amount of TV they watch. And this one clip, I've got a couple, there's a couple of little bits here. One is from a chap called Ross, who's aged eight, and I think a girl called Bethany or Isabel, not sure which, who's also aged eight. And Ross's comments about the amount of TV he watches became like a catchphrase in our house for the rest of the week. Here he is talking about it.
So all of you, how much time do you all spend watching television, for example?
I spend ages. Whenever I finish my breakfast, I go and watch telly. Whenever I get home from school, I watch telly. Whenever I'm not doing the computer, I watch telly.
And my nana lets me watch telly all the time because she's got to cook.
She's got to cook.
Telly, I watch telly.
I watch telly when I wake up, I watch telly. When I get out of bed, I watch telly. When I have my bath, I watch telly. When I'm having my breakfast, I watch telly. When I come home from school, I watch telly. When I'm asleep, I watch telly.
While I watch telly.
While I watch telly, I'm watching telly. If I'm on the computer, I have a little telly next to the computer that I watch, and then I watch telly while I'm
doing
that.
When I go to the cinema, I watch telly.
And got some glasses, and they got small tellies
in the inside.
When I'm
asleep, I watch telly.
I watch telly when I'm asleep.
Swimming underwater.
In my dreams, I watch telly.
He watched a lot of telly.
Watches loads of TV.
I mean,
TV.
That's good news for telly, because I was under the impression that it was slowly dying.
Oh, really?
Apart from The X Factor and major live events, nobody really watches anything anymore.
The children love it.
The children love it, don't they? Because they're not allowed on the computer, though, but as soon as they get on the computer... Yeah, don't you think?
It's what happens.
They're more interested.
Oh, I see, yeah. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Good news for telly. Telly should aim itself at the under five.
Children's TV is doing very well at the moment. I mean, entertainment in general for children is probably as good as it's ever been, I think.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I mean, you've got the Pixar movies. We're living through the golden age of...
People are angry about massive cutbacks in CITV and CBBC, right?
Really?
Well, they were a year ago or so.
Were you allowed to watch telly willy-nilly when you were a little...
Willy-nilly?
Yeah. Willy-nilly telly. or were there curbs put on your...
No, I had a telly. Yeah, I had a telly.
You had a telly in your room?
From when I was seven, yeah.
Seven?
Well, I had viral meningitis. I was in hospital for a week having a lumbar puncture.
You're lucky.
A spinal lumbar puncture.
Yeah, but you're lucky.
So my lovely granny gave me a telly.
A week of spinal meningitis and you get a telly out.
Come on.
I would have done
it. It did feel like a good deal.
If that was an option.
I would have had the spine out. Replaced with a broom, as long as I'd got that telly.
Listen, I'm joking, obviously. I'm not wishing spinal meningitis on anyone or considering it a good option for anything. But still, you're lucky. You got telly out.
Oh, it was a wicked telly.
So you could watch telly in the morning and in the evening and when you got
I watched Deliverance on it in black and white.
When you were
aged
eight.
About eight, yeah. Squeal like a pig! Woohoo! I like to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration because I couldn't join. But now my worries have disappeared. And now my mail might be read out instead of thrown in the trash and forgotten about. That's the original funky version, back again, using the word trash.
I love that version.
Sure to stir up some controversy.
Old school, man. I love it.
Yeah,
trash,
yeah, yeah.
The funky version. It's great. It's like a breath of fresh hair.
Thanks. So Text the Nation last week was about stuff what you've nicked from the street, right?
Civil sharing.
Civil sharing, yeah. Things that you'd appropriated because you assumed they were being thrown out because they were sitting on the pavement or some such place.
This struck a chord most particularly with men because I believe that it is a primal urge for the man to find things in skips and things like that and then bring it home and keep it in the house just in case. Because it may come in useful.
You love gender-based assumptions. You're listening to Women's Hour.
That's true.
Which is a programme for women's.
Yeah.
We both like loose women's.
That's true.
And what you just said there was a generalisation about men.
Yeah.
Do you not think that... Well, it's good culturally. It's good culturally for men and women to be separated, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
And have different likes and interests.
There are fundamental differences between the man and the woman. And it's insane to deny
physical,
them.
Physical differences.
Not just physical.
Mental differences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Physiological mental as well as mental differences.
Yeah.
And to ignore them is madness.
Is foopery.
I'm not saying that that people should be prejudiced.
No.
Or there should be discrimination.
Or people should be sexist.
Yeah. But
or are you saying that?
Well, no.
Are you saying people should be sexist?
No. Being sexist is not the same as appreciating the differences between men and women.
You're absolutely right. I was being silly.
Yeah, you're taunting. You're prodding me with your stick. But I'm refusing to rise.
Anyway, but that's a fair point. Men have... What is it?
Men like hoarding things, right?
Right.
Generally, they're the hunter-gatherers. They like to go out and hunt and gather.
God.
And they like to get the signs and bring them back in case the signs come in useful. Also, the signs might jazz
Annabelle
up the cave.
Likes going to the supermarket.
Uh-huh.
Is that not hunting and gathering? I mean, she really likes it. She hunts around for food, gathers it in a trolley.
Not the same.
Not the same.
No, because she's just getting scrapples for the
scrapples?
Chicks.
Scrapples?
Yeah.
I don't know. What are scrapples?
The men,
a new product.
The men are hunting and gathering things for the cave to jazz up the cave.
Right. Jazz cave.
Like an illuminated sign.
Yeah.
Let's read out some of the messages
we
got. After all that, I'm going to start by reading out a message from some women who did a bit of civil sharing. Mm. And it goes like this. Hi, Adam and Joe. On our walk home from a night out, me and my housemates came across a two-story... Hi, Harry Potter on a broomstick. I mean, that's very tall, two stories, which had fallen off a massive 3D film placard on the main road. We decided, as it had fallen off, it was now public property. So three small women dragged this monster, MDF Harry, back to our tiny backyard. The broom-riding Harry covered our entire living room and first-floor bedroom window and fast became the local attraction for our student friends. One day, a knock on the door introduced us to our local police force. Apparently, they'd been looking for the missing Potter and had been tipped off of its whereabouts by some eagle-eyed passers-by who saw a giant two-story Harry Potter at someone's house. There were threats of charges, which were finally dropped after they realised it wasn't a crime of vandalism and that three small women did not have the capacity to dislodge the flying Potter by themselves. They sadly removed Harry from our property.
That's an interesting one, isn't it? Oh, what, she signed it off in quite a
she
challenging
says,
way.
Love, Bonnie. Kill Boggins.
I mean, there are when you go onto the motorway out of London, there are often amazing adverts, aren't there, with
That's
all
right.
sorts of things. Like years ago, there was a sort of Perspex box with a person in it. Do you remember there was an office?
Sure.
They kind of mounted an actual working office to
was
a
Was that
billboard.
Even for office space, the film? No.
I don't know. I can't remember. There was a car mounted up there.
Yeah.
And things like that, it's very tempting to nick them, isn't it?
Of course it is.
Because often they're only just out of reach.
What, you mean go into the Perspex box and steal the person?
Steal the person. Yeah. Or go in there with them.
Yeah.
Do you think that's right, that the police force should waste taxpayers' money by trying to get back a giant Harry Potter? Do you think that's... It's got... I mean, I think they
now
should
Now you're
have
asking
let
the big questions.
Them. I think, you know, it's advertising. It's already kind of intruding into our psyche and public space.
Yeah.
With their silly adverts. Well, shouldn't we be allowed to just take them home?
If they were guilty of criminal damage by vandalising the poster in the first place, that's a different matter. That is fair enough for the cops to be dealing with. But if it had fallen off and the ladies had rehoused it...
Well, yeah, the coppers obviously took a kindly attitude, didn't they? They didn't press charges.
Kindly coppers, hello, hello,
let
hello.
You off just this once,
just
ladies.
Just this once we're going to let you go, kindly coppers.
Here's another one from... Oh, which one am I going to read? Yeah, here we go. This is from Paul Morgan. About 15 years ago, a load of us were staying in a cottage in France for New Year. Some of the gang went for a walk and found... an abandoned house with the door open. They proceeded to grab as much stuff as they could carry and bring it back to the cottage. Wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. Standard lamps, chairs, cushions, pots, pans, etc. Needless to say, they were spotted by the French equivalent of Neighbourhood Watch and the gendarmes soon turned up. I've got some great photos of them sheepishly walking back with the booty, policemen looking on in an amused, bemused fashion. Yeah, that's got a little... Paul Morgan, that's got a flaw in it, hasn't it, that one? It's the phrase abandoned house.
Abandoned, fully furnished house.
Temporarily abandoned while the owner went to the shop. I mean, that's a good application of that word for this whole Text the Nation, isn't it? Because... what's the definition of abandoned? How can you tell if something's abandoned?
This is the thing. This is what happens. I've been through it myself. I've spoken about it on this show.
An abandoned house.
You know, you find something and you sort of convince yourself that it's abandoned and you reappropriate it and you snaffle it. And then you start feeling guilt about, like, maybe your definition of abandoned is a little bit too flexible.
How can you ransack a house in a, like, spirit of fun and opportunism? I don't know. That seems to me to be going too far.
Here's something a little bit similar, but didn't seem to be a problem ultimately. This is from Sally in Shepherd's Bush. After me talking about all these men doing it, it's all the women nicking it. Dear Adam and Joe, when I first moved to London, I moved to a pokey one-bedroom place in Hammersmith, not big enough for normal misappropriated street furniture. But one evening on my way home, I spotted a neighbour had left about 12 bottles of wine outside their house. On closer inspection, I noticed these were all full, unopened wine bottles, seals untampered and everything. I walked on by, but noticed they were still there the following morning. That evening, when they were still there, I decided to pop one in my bag. Surely no sane person would leave wine outside their house and not expect it to be taken. The next evening, I took two more bottles. But by the following evening, it was clear that someone else was onto it. So I picked up the whole box and took it home. Amazing! Free wine that must have cost at least a fiver a bottle. Still the mark of class in my eyes. Love you, Sally Shepherd's Bush. I mean, what's the deal there? Someone's left... But then I would be worried that it was tainted in some way. Why would someone leave free wine in a box there unless there was something
That's
wrong?
That's quite an enigmatic email you've read out there.
Uh-huh.
It lacks contextualizing information. Well, I mean, so she saw the wine She took it, then she took it all. The end.
She's snaffling a little bit at a time. She's testing the waters, seeing if there's any problem with snaffling one bottle.
Yeah.
And going back for the whole
Isn't
box.
That just like shoplifting?
Well, it's abandoned.
Abandoned? Oh, in that case.
It's wine time.
Here is another one from a person called Adam McQueen. When I was at university, I went round to see my friend Viv. She shared a house and her housemates said she was out, but on her way back. So we sat in the kitchen and waited for her. After about 15 minutes, Viv arrived with a big beaming smile on her face and an even bigger bunch of flowers in her arms. Oh, we all said, who's been giving you flowers, Viv? Viv said, I just found them in the street, still beaming. Where, we asked, baffled. Oh, they were just propped up against a lamppost, she said cheerily. Her smile gradually faded away and was replaced by a look of horror to match our own. I'd like to apologise to everyone in the world for this story.
No, surely that's apocryphal.
Do you think?
Yeah, surely.
Think that's made up?
I just can't believe anyone would do that. Maybe if it was the first bunch there. I mean, if for any reason you don't know what we're talking about, sometimes when there's been a tragic accident, like a fatal accident in the street, people will leave floral tributes at the scene of the accident. And I guess maybe if you don't know about that, if you're young or maybe come from another country or something, I don't know, you would think, ooh,
Viv didn't make the connection.
Free flowers.
I'm going to read an upbeat one quickly just to clear the air.
Yeah, okay.
Do you know what I mean? Here's one from Lucy Loftus. When I was at university in Sheffield, my mate Dougal pinched one of those hospital signs that point you to the correct department with an arrow. He fixed it to the wall outside his bedroom, pointing to the door. The sign read, Breast Examination Centre.
Do we like Dougal for doing
that's
that?
That's more like it. I don't know. It's just a classic. It's a classic. Don't you think?
Totally irresponsible classic. Here's a free play for you now.
Do you think he fooled anybody?
You reckon he got some
I mean,
traffic?
People respond to those municipal hospital signs without really thinking.
Do they?
Yes, they do.
Especially the...
Hello.
Are you really a doctor?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, I am.
It's Dr. Sexy. Is that how Dr. Sexy got started?
Yes, it is. By stealing hospital signs and then just mounting them. Yeah.
Setting up a little ad hoc clinic. Adam and Joe with a podcast.
One of the many areas in which I underperform in this programme is the jingle writing. I've got a couple of jingles that are all right.
There was a jingle of yours in the podcast last week, wasn't there?
Was
sort of like an electronic noise with you just going...
I don't think that was
mine. Does
that
ring a bell?
No, I didn't hear that.
It's a weird thing. It slipped in the podcast somehow. It's like, weird. What the heck is that? I assumed it was yours.
That a listen. I don't know. It's a weird anomalous sound. But I was trying to redress my lack of jingle writing about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I was under pressure of time. I thought I'd quickly try and do a jingle. So I did. I'd done a jingle. Out it plopped. I brought it into the studio and gave it to James Sterling. This was about 3 weeks ago. I emailed it, actually, and he emailed back saying, oh, good jingle. You know, that'll be good for the top of the show. We've never played it.
We played it once, didn't we?
I don't think we did. Did we?
I'm sure we did.
Did we?
Should we play it right now?
I don't think we've ever played it. But my suspicion is it's because it's awful and he didn't want to tell me.
Well, it's a commercial track, though. It's not even a garage band track, right?
That's true, yeah. But it's a BBC track, isn't it?
No, no, no. It's by Booker T and the MGs.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, you think that's why he's not playing it?
I think possibly.
Really?
I don't know. But it's not a problem for the live show.
It's
Let's hear
problem.
It.
It's not a problem. Let's hear it. It's a cricket jingle. Don't get out of bed.
I like it.
Well, you've done a new one as well, right?
You don't have to worry, though, because you've written the greatest jingle of all time, which is the Retro Text.
Yeah, but what if
jingle?
That was a bizarre anomaly? I mean, I'm not agreeing that the way you described it is the case, but what if it was just a freak anomaly?
Yeah, well, when you write a hit that big, it's hard. I churn them out, you see. I'm like a Tin Pan Alley guy. Here's my jingle for a segment. We decided that we were going to turn this into a segment, right? Famous name repurposing. In everyday
yes,
life.
Yes, yes.
Right? So here's the jingle I came up with.
Famous name repurposing. I do it Keira Knightley. It's really Orson Welles if you do it Matthew Rightly. If your life's not Boris Godunov, you're Michael McIntyre. Do some famous name repurposing and maybe things won't feel so Danny Dyer.
Hey, that's good. You see, you've done it all in the jingle.
Yeah, I've explained it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that makes it clear what this little segment's about. You've even got Danny Dyer's book there. Did you go and spend money on that?
No, I just, upstairs, in the office upstairs, I saw it lying around. It's an unauthorised biography of Britain's toughest star, Danny Dyer.
Wow.
I was just reading little bits out of it.
And the cover is, it looks like splattered blood with his photograph.
It doesn't just look like splattered blood.
It is splattered blood.
That
you
Danny
muppet.
Got himself
lamp.
Daffing no, someone's
he's a,
face.
He's a very sensitive dimensional individual.
Read a random sentence from the book that doesn't contain foul language.
There aren't any. Danny needn't have worried about being liked or whether audiences would get it. Yeah,
yes.
That's all you need to know.
I like it. It's a good book. What's it called?
It's called The Real Deal.
Real Deal.
Real Deal.
So, famous name repurposing, right? I mean, I think the jingle more or less explained it. This was something we had as a textination a few weeks back, but we still keep getting them through. They keep dribbling through on the message system, right? Don't forget, if you want to email us...
It's quite a horrible image.
Dribbling through.
Dribbling through on the message system. Someone should just get a little flannel and wipe the spout.
The email address, if you would like to send us a message... I'm just ignoring...
They're calcifying down the wall.
The messages.
Yeah.
Because of the dribbling. The email address is adamandjoe.6music@bbc.co.
This would never happen if James Sterling was producing.
.uk.
He'd have it printed out properly.
So you can send us messages anytime you like about anything you like. Actually, I'll take this opportunity right now to say, can you please try and keep your messages...
Can you please...
concise.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, this is the thing, listeners. We're getting quite a lot of emails and some. It's wonderful they're so long and involved, and we both wish we had the time to read them all, but we couldn't get through them all this week in time.
No.
So the shorter you can make them, the more equitable it is for everybody who writes.
I mean, it's cheeky because we ourselves ramble
cheeky.
A great deal.
Cheeky.
And we are anything but concise. But we ask you, we pray for some concision from you.
We pray for concision.
Here is a message from Vic, and he says, when I'm complaining that my girlfriend is going away for a long time, I will say to her, oh, don't go, I'll be Sylvester Stallone-ly.
No wonder she goes.
Also, he says, I'm looking for employment, so I spend a lot of time on the internet looking for openings. Everyone does that. When the said girlfriend asks, what are you up to? I reply, I'm looking for Steve Jobs. I don't think she likes it. Sometimes I just say it in my head.
I prefer Stallone-ly.
Kiss, kiss, big hug, small hug, big hug, small hug, big hug, small hug, small hug, big kiss, small kiss from Vic.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm ever Stallone-ly.
Text the nation. Text, text, text. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
Yeah, you're expecting me to go text the nation this week's listeners.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, well, I ain't done it.
Oh,
now what are you going to do?
You're a contrarian.
Yes.
All right, I'll set the scene for the listeners in that case. I was on a break, a half-term break this week, listeners, and we went to Centre Parks, me and my family. Had a jolly good time, although there was a little bit of bad weather. And because my family are at a certain age, like I've got young children, right?
Yeah.
Three young children.
Yeah.
They were a bit too young to do a lot of the really fun, exciting things at Centre Parks, the zip wires and the more roughy-tufty activities. So there were times when we were more or less housebound. We were in our little lodge, right, which was very nice. But we went a bit stir-crazy, and it seemed a bit nuts that we elected to spend 4 days in, like, a much smaller space than the one we normally occupy.
Yeah.
You know, with all the attendant problems of having a baby and two young boys, and it was magnified. It was seemed madness. Anyway, we played a bit of Monopoly, right? We had a junior version of Monopoly there, which we'd brought with us. We thought it would be a good idea to sit down and have a little bit of Monopoly fun. And the rules are very straightforward. They're even simpler than for the regular Monopoly. But within about 10 minutes, there was stropping and flouncing off, and the whole thing degenerated. I mean, by the end of 20 minutes, I was sat there on my own. And every single person, my wife had to go and feed the baby, but the two boys had flounced off at various points. And then they came back. And
what made them flounce? What's the trigger?
Well, it's hard to recall exactly. This is the weird thing, because everyone was technically playing by the rules. One of the triggers was how long it took.
It's a long game.
Yeah. And someone was faffing around. Frank was faffing around a little bit with his money and paying over. Like, he couldn't decide if he wanted to buy one of the properties or was he going to pass on it. So there was a huge amount of stropping, like, almost immediately. Oh, you're taking too long. Hurry up. Hurry up. And then there's, like, arguments about how much money you've got. People started getting annoyed when their luck was running out. You know what I mean? Like, this is not fair. I always land in jail. I'm getting fined again. It's like, well, that's the
rules. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
I sometimes feel like that during Scrabble.
Right.
When I draw a really bad hand. It feels like the fate is against you.
But you don't strop off.
Sometimes I do.
You
leave
the game.
I'm too mature to physically strop off, but in my head I'm dropping myself right off.
I mean, Scrabble. Scrabble is famously a contentious game, but not Monopoly.
It's that blend of
king.
It's like life. It's that blend of luck and skill. And even if you've got all the skill in the world, you can still be thwarted by bad fortune.
Right. I mean,
that's annoying.
Monopoly essentially is a kind of a microcosm of capitalist society. Right?
Une microcosme.
Right. And so to that degree, you do feel as if it says something
about
you
as
a person.
To operate in the world.
Yeah. And if you're doing badly, which I always do, I always feel like this is exactly like my life. The universe hates me. And now it's happening again in this Monopoly game. And I'm terrible with money. Why is all the money just going away? Why have I got no money? I should have bought that property when I landed on Park Lane. I'm insane. What am I doing? It's leaking out of me.
So what's the Text the Nation premise?
It's about the biggest arguments you've had whilst playing games.
Good one. I like to play a bit of Jenga.
Right.
And what infuriates me is somebody using two hands. I mean, you pull the Jenga, what are they called? Bricks.
Just a block, yeah, brick.
You pull the Jenga out block with the Jenga block out with finger and thumb, right? You can't use the other hand to push it from the other side.
Really?
No.
Why not?
And you can't touch the table either.
I'd be in trouble if I was playing Jenga.
I know, that's part of the skill.
Balls.
Infuriates me if people do that. Sometimes people do that, like, unconsciously.
It doesn't say on the box you can only use one hand, does it?
Well, I haven't got the box with me, but I believe that's true. I would say it does.
We need some confirmation on that, listeners.
Another thing that really annoys me, when I'm playing Connect Four, I'm good at Connect Four.
Sure you are. I can
take on all comers.
You and I used to play Speed Connect
I've got Four. A system.
Have you?
But what really annoys me, and this is nobody's fault, but a game of Connect Four is reaching its gut-wrenching climax, and then suddenly the kind of swing bridge that holds all the coins in.
Yes.
You tap it,
someone
and it swings
it
open, and they all fall out.
Ah.
That can be infuriating.
Well, back to Monopoly. Mm. The thing that really winds me up is sloppy dice throwing.
Sloppy dice throwing.
And when people just take too long shaking the thing, first of all, and blowing on it.
Yes.
Come on, Lady Luck, Lady Luck. Lady Luck, come on. Shake, 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 shake. Shake it both hands, shake it both hands. Shake it one hand, shake it one. Shake behind the head,
is
shake it behind
what
the back.
Frank does.
This kind of thing, right? And then lobbing the dice so that it scatters all the houses and all the hotels and all the little boots and top hats and everything on the board. It all gets scattered and stuff. All the money goes flying and the title deeds and everything. Thanks very much, Frank! You've totally destroyed the game now!
Noises, beeping noises.
You know, Christmas is coming, Joe.
Right.
The goose is getting fat.
Yes.
Could you put a penny in the old man's hat?
No.
If you haven't got a penny, a halfpenny would
don't,
do.
I don't like to go near him anyway.
If you haven't got a halfpenny, then God bless you.
He's surrounded by his own urine.
That's Jim Carrey you're talking about.
Oh. What?
He's the guy in The Christmas Carol, right?
Yes, Robert Zemeckis' Christmas Carol. That's very exciting. Yeah. 3D fun coming up.
Absolutely. But one of the most exciting things about Christmas is Christmas albums.
Yeah.
When people do special Christmas albums, right? Mm-hmm. This is something that happens in America a lot more than it does in the UK, I think. Like, for American artists, it's all part of the folder roll of the Christmas season. Bring out a Christmas album. You know, they've all done it. And this year, Bob Dylan has got a Christmas album out. And I actually first heard about this through a friend of mine who's in a band, my friend Dougie from Travis, right? He was approached earlier in the year to write a song for Bob Dylan for his Christmas album, amongst many other artists who'd been approached, apparently. So I was thinking maybe this Christmas album's going to be like new Christmas songs with just Dylan doing his Dylan thing over them. That's not how it's turned out at all. what he's done is just covered, like, standards, Christmas standards. I've got a few clips of some of them to play you right now. Very short clips, because if I played you long clips, you would start weeping and crying, and you would want to lose the will to live. This is inspired by a message we got from Robert Ralph, who said, "Hi, Rob here, long-time listener, first email contribution. Thought you might be looking for some Christmas tune fodder for the coming festive season. If so, I found this new album of Christmas hits by Adam Buxton. I mean, Bob Dylan. His voice on this album is the most weird ever. I'm worried he might not even reach Christmas. Well worth a listen. Cheers, fellas." Well, thanks, Robert, for alerting us to this. And here's a couple of clips right now. Winter Wonderland. Fire this one off.
Later on, we'll conspire as we dream by the fire to face unafraid the plans that we made, walking in our winter wonderland.
So you get the idea, right? It's like to call it saccharine is a massive understatement.
It sounds like John Culshaw, or it sounds like an impressionist doing an album.
Yes, exactly. And that's Dylan's new voice, right, which we've talked about on this show before, which is why Robert Ralph was saying it's Christmas hits by Adam Buxton, I mean Bob Dylan, because it's an enjoyable thing to do, a new Bob Dylan voice.
Mm.
He's had about three different voices in his career, maybe more than that, I would say. This early Bob Dylan with the classic sort of nasal sound. Then after he had his motorcycle accident, something weird happened and that kind of slight squeak creeped into his voice, which he's got on Nashville Skyline and some of those albums. And now, late period Bob Dylan, he just sounds like a Muppet, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what you're getting on the Christmas album. Here's a clip from A Little Town of Bethlehem.
The hopes and fears of all the years are met in
Cookies, cookies, cookies. I love cookies. Mmm, yum, yum, yum. Gobble them all up. Christmas cookie time, cookie time, cookie time. Gobble, gobble, gobble all the cookies right now. Ah, cookie.
What about that for a song?
That would be nice.
He does sound like a Muppet, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I've done a little go at one of them.
Oh, you've done a little go?
I mean, it's going to be Christmas soon, and my plan...
Not that soon.
If I get... Sure it is. The lights are up. The posters for Christmas Carol, it's all in Oxford Street.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's coming, whether you like it or not. And I'm going to try and do my own Bob Dylan Christmas album. And I've had a little stab here. I've started off with Auld Lang Syne.
Should old acquaintance be forgotten never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgotten for the sake of Auld Lang Syne?
Lovely Caribbean sort of feel to that.
Let's put an extra layer on it.
Yeah, though. Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? Is it that easy? Do you think a lot of people would buy an album like what Bob Dylan has done?
Yeah, definitely.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems very formulaic is the only thing.
It's just
the thing about Christmas. It doesn't seem very... interesting.
No, it's so
it
weird.
It seems very formulaic.
I can't get my head around it because he's such an intelligent, interesting,
this
creative
guy. This is the problem
guy.
With Christmas as a whole, right. Isn't it? I mean, that's a very good example of what it is. It's so, you know, it can kill the interest in even Bob Dylan, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You take that same tedious trope and then spread it over, 3 months?
Uh-huh.
Really thinly.
Yeah.
It's got to be changed.
My favourite time of year.
I love the day itself, don't
sure.
get me wrong. When the three like big Christmas days come, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Boxing Day.
Three wise men.
I love it.
Yeah.
But it's the flipping build up that makes me want to just basically, I can't say.
No.
I love it. Do you love the build-up?
Absolutely love it.
Do you?
Love everything about
you're
it.
Lucky.
Text the nation. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
Little crunchy sound there. Was that a little carrot?
Oh, was the mic up for that?
A K-rot.
Yeah, a little K-rot.
Is that how kids say carrot nowadays? K-rot.
Yeah.
K-rot.
Oi, guess one of them rots.
Rotters.
Yeah.
Guess your rotter.
Oi, look at the size of my rottle.
So Text the Nation's all about terrible arguments you've had during family game playing, like board games, or it could be charades, or, you know, any sort of game that's supposed to bring everyone together.
We've mentioned this before.
That ends up schisming them.
But my favourite is always my friend Mark's story about his dad playing
the Scrabble story, yeah.
And
Quit Jut.
Yeah. Mm. He came up with two words, one of which was Quit Jut.
Well,
the word quit and jut, like, together, and he wanted the points for both those words.
I mean, the risky area is...
Quit jut.
...is that you are... I mean, a family has a a family has a hierarchy, doesn't it?
I like that one.
Oh, no. That was Adam, not Boggins. Boggins hasn't showed up today. But a family has a hierarchy, and it's important to the functioning of the family that everyone knows where they are in the pecking order.
Uh-huh.
Suddenly, when you play a game, everyone's level pegging... And it's almost like, okay, let's redraw this hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And dads get their pride challenged. Kids see an opportunity to gain some authority over mum and dad.
Yeah.
And that's where things start going bonio.
Dad's got to set an example. And in that case, Mark's dad went absolutely mental and started jumping, hopping about.
He played a non-existent word.
Quit jut. And then he also wanted to play BIP. B-I-P.
BIP. A BIP might be a word. I think it was in the 40s.
Yeah.
Toddle BIP.
Toodle pip, maybe.
No, toddle bip.
Toddle
bip. Here's an email from Hetty in Totnes. My ex-husband managed to create an argument playing a cooperative game called Sky Travelers. The goal was for us to help each other to get back to our spaceship after finding the parts. Sounds like Pikmin, doesn't it?
Mm.
The rest of us died, but he said he won because he survived. He made up some elaborate story about where he had ended up and about how great it was. I mean, that's quite abstract because we don't really understand the game. But in there's a little kernel of somebody in such denial that they had lost that they have to sort of invent some elaborate narrative or attitude that makes them seem like a winner.
And then crowing over the others as well to rub their faces in their non-existent victory.
I mean, these are quite protoplasmic emails. No insult to the people who've emailed, but maybe this broth will thicken as
no insult. You're calling them
on.
Protoplasm. Call them amoebas. Why not?
Single cell organisms. That's not what I'm trying to say. You know
saying.
What I mean? I just this idea is snowballing, and the snowball is quite small.
Yeah.
Maxine in Bexhill. I once came across a Monopoly set at my boyfriend's house, and we decided to have a friendly game.
Yeah.
He won. I demanded four rematches and lost each game. At this point, I burst into tears, and my bemused boyfriend now refuses to play with me ever again. Now, this is another good thing. It happens with Connect Four a lot. Rematch. Best of three. Best of five. Best of 10. Best of 20. Do you know what I mean? Just
sure.
Not letting go.
Yeah,
I will win this one.
It's terrible. I mean, it's shocking. If you're a person with a gambling problem and you're betting money on these kind of things, that's how you end up like a massive loser.
Yes.
So
yeah, that's bad. I mean, that's entering into a different and dangerous area, isn't it?
Yeah.
My Uncle David once tossed a whole chessboard and pieces into the fire because
Whoa.
He was losing against my dad.
Uncle Dave.
Dad forgave him, even though it was his chess set, telling me his behaviour was typical of his brother because he was highly strung due to him being an actor. Carolyn from Cambridge.
Dave!
Don't worry, he's highly strung. He's an actor.
I don't believe it! Beaten again the chess! Right! It's in the fire with your chess set!
What would happen if you were playing chess with Blessed and Callow?
I've beaten you again, my friend! I'm going to put the chess set in the fire! No! Stop! That's my favourite chess set! It's burning! Can you see it burning?
That's what would happen.
Oh, my ears are in pain. Wow, I'm so glad I didn't buy that house between Blessed and Callow.
Yeah.
That would have been a disaster. Oh, no, who left the door open?
Bruv.
I'm really sorry, listeners. I know some of you really object to this.
Oh, Dada, I've been rolling in it. I love you.
He's very vocal today. Hello, Boggins.
Hello, bruv.
Don't come too close. Hello, Boggins.
I'm going to just jump on your leg.
Ben, can I borrow your glove?
I'm going to jump on your leg for a little bit.
Just give me that plastic bag and I'll wrap it around my head.
Give it a little rub if that's okay.
That's
I love
not
you.
A plastic bag, that's a piece of paper. All right, no, don't, Ben, don't worry, don't worry.
I'm
just giving him a little pat on the head, listeners, but I have put plastic around my hand because, oh, jeepers. What is that? That's like fish. And a bit of puke. That's got so many notes in it. It's like really elaborate.
I love you.
Repulsive perfume.
What's I'm just going to, listen, bro.
He's so vocal.
I'm going to drag myself across the carpet.
Boggins is a dog.
Across on my bum to itch my glands, if that's okay. I love you.
He's doing that thing now. He's very noisy. He's intrusive. Oh, that's just a little bit repulsive. Poor old Boggins. Listen, so Boggins is this dog that wanders around here in the BBC.
Boggins doing
and,
it. Get him out. What's he doing? Get out. Take care of Boggins. They shouldn't be in here.
Boggins.
Why is he here?
I don't know. He got let in. I think it was... Well, you went out to the toilet.
Went to get some water and then I came back.
And then there was Boggins. I mean, we've had quite a bit of correspondence about Boggins.
Has he been dragging himself?
There is a bit of a sort of a trail across the carpet.
There's a skid mark.
He's ill, man. Be nice. Kieran from Southfields. Me and my housemate were distraught to hear about possibly putting down Boggins on last week's podcast. So much so, we founded the SOB group, Save Our Boggins. What you both fail to realise is he's not just your dog, he is the nation's dog.
The nation's favourite dog. Here's a message from Glenn Simpson. This message from Glenn Simpson is not quite so positive. Although I'm a dog person, not a half-man, half-dog, you understand, but someone who likes dogs, I plead with you to put Boggins down. As hearing a grown man pretend to be a dog and eat his own poo while licking another grown man's face.
What?
Is just wrong.
Hang on.
It makes me feel uncomfortable.
Rewind a second.
Week in, week
out. What was the beginning of that sentence?
He says something about...
Hearing a
grown man pretend to be a dog.
What's that about?
I have no idea what he means by that.
Why are you reading that one out?
Well, I just thought it was interesting. He finishes up by saying it ranks up there with George Galloway pretending to be a cat. Stop the madness in capitals. Kill the dog. Ta-ta for now. Glenn Simpson.
Well, yeah, I mean, as you know, listeners, we've been thinking about...
Humanely
killing...
Executing
Boggins.
Boggins.
I mean, we think it would be good for ratings, because it would... We would do it on the show.
A public execution.
Well, it's...
That's the way Broken Britain's headed anyway, right?
Well, it's the big British castle. It's
exactly.
It's a medieval... atavistic organization. It's the kind of thing they're good at. We could dust off the stocks or the guillotine.
Mm-hmm.
But then we've had a lot of people who love Boggins. For instance, Ian says Boggins reminds him a lot of his old dog Bertie. Bertie was adopted when he was about 100 years old. He was blind and deaf, clambered about with a strange toothless grin, often wandering into a room and doing a massive wee while grinning gormlessly at you. It's like you, Adam.
Yeah.
His breath smelled like death. His poos were horrific and he was clumsy and simple, but he was literally the best dog ever.
Oh.
Whenever I hear Boggins come into the studio, I get a mental image of a gigantic Bertie.
I would say he's not as nice as Bertie.
Please don't ever kill Boggins.
No, oh, that's a nice message.
I mean, it's a very, very difficult situation.
Have you seen
it?
Up, the film Up?
Yeah, sure I have.
You know, there's a dog in there who reminded me a lot of
who
Boggins.
Who talks, yeah, they have little
he
sound
He says,
boxes.
I love you.
Yes, are you like squirrels?
Right, yeah.
He says, pine squirrel! Yeah.
Ah, that is a good
Well,
film.
Some people have suggested that Boggins could have a media career.
Yeah.
I mean, at the moment, he's just an intrusion, and on a basic phonic level,
he also
find him annoying.
He also sounds like a comedian called Brian Gittins.
Does he?
Yeah, you should check out Brian Gittins. He's very funny, but he sounds a lot like Boggins.
Does he? I don't know what to do about
coincidence.
Boggins. I think just keep him out of the studio and the problem will go away,
you
even
reckon?
If the stink doesn't.
I mean, the stink is overpowering. Him. That's the main problem with it.
Some people have suggested washing him.
I don't want to touch him.
Text the nation. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
And Text the Nation is all about furious arguments and confrontations that have arisen out of fun family games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Board games, cards, that kind of thing.
Here's an anonymous one. My dad once stormed out of the room and declared that a game of Cranium didn't count because my two little sisters had won. His reason was that it wasn't fair because they were twins.
And they've got the same cranium.
Some kind of psychic ability.
They've got similar braniums.
That's not impressive for Dad.
Come on, Dad. That is bad on a number of levels.
Tom in Cardiff. Once when I was younger, we were engaged in a family game of Scrabble. We were pretty deep into the game and the board was filling up with tiled words. It was my turn, but I couldn't deploy the word I wanted. My family kept nagging me to make my turn. It was stressing me out. So I picked up the whole board and threw it onto the kitchen floor.
Whoa.
Thus ruining the game for everyone. I've never played Scrabble since. Tom in Cardiff. Is that a good tactic if you're losing?
To throw the whole thing on the floor.
I mean, it's conclusive, isn't it?
But people do tend to think of you as an idiot hole thereafter.
Mm, that's the risk, isn't it? Freddie Elsom says, whenever I play my girlfriend at chess, I always win. I gain great satisfaction by making fight noises and explosions when I take her king, ultimately resulting in the destruction of the chessboard as my victorious piece kicks and headbutts all her pieces. When I tire of this, I demand loser cleans up and leave the room. Now, what about that, like, over-the-top celebratory behaviour when you're pulling ahead to just taunt your opponents?
That causes problems immediately.
That can be the kind of spark that lights the fuse that ends in the argument. And we got time for one more.
The fuse that broke the camels.
When the family was bonding over a jigsaw, I would secrete a piece somewhere about my person so I could always have the joyous satisfaction of inserting the last bit.
Whoa.
Geordie Alex from Holloway.
You are a super ponce, Geordie
That's
Alex.
That's crafty. I think he's a mega dude. Finally, Anne Tebbs. Adam and Joe.
Very nice.
My ex-boyfriend and family invited their Uncle Brian round for Christmas dinner. They decided to have an after-dinner game of Jenga. After a few glasses of wine, Uncle Brian started insisting that they play Jenga for money. The family objected, since it was Christmas Day, and knowing that their uncle is a little highly strung.
Jenga for...
Eventually...
Let's play for money!
Eventually, they conceded to keep Uncle Brian happy. Unfortunately, Uncle Brian lost numerous games. He kicked the game across the living room floor, shouting hysterically, quote, "I'll kill you and your family," close quotes. Merry Christmas, Anne.
"I'll kill you!
Let's play
and
for
your
money!
Family.
Come on, you pansy! Let's play! Source your money! I'll kill you and your family!"
Uncle Brian. Uncle Brian,
it's
yeah.
Good Uncle Brian round again.
Great Christmas.
Podcast. That is all there is of the podcast. It is all over.
Oh, golly gosh. Well, man, we've got a week off next week. We're in business. You're on business. I'm on business. Everyone's on business.
Business.
And we've got Collings and Herring filling in for us. Andrew Collins and Richard Herring. Two magnificent broadcasters, stroke comedians in their own
they
right.
They really are. Both, I think we could call them friends, could we?
Yeah, I hope so.
Certainly warm acquaintances and people whose work and sayings we both very much enjoy.
And the worry is that people will like them more than us, of
course.
Yeah,
this is the thin end of the wedge. It's the beginning of the end for us.
But, you know, hopefully they won't do such a brilliant job that it all goes wrong, because, you know, we love doing the show and we can't wait to come back the week after, so stick with us. And don't forget as well that, you know, there will be an extra little podcast thing that we're going to record. I do sound a little bit roomy on here, don't I?
I think there's something a bit wonkoid with the audio levels on these links.
It's okay, the listeners don't mind.
Well, the listeners could tell us. Sometimes when I listen to the podcast back at home, sometimes one of us is really loud and the other's quiet, and I wonder if it's my speakers.
Right.
Or if it's the...
It varies, you know.
Producers here at the castle, they work very hard to
they
make it right.
Very
they
hard.
Really do.
But then people come in. Don Letts comes in. He fiddles with all the gear. Hey, welcome to the Fart Show. And he plays around with the mixing desks and resets all the levels and stuff.
Does he?
No, I'm joking. Just taking another opportunity.
Maybe it's Boggins.
To disrespect Don Letts.
Maybe Boggins is in here, like, licking all the faders.
Hey, speaking of
maybe
Don
Letts, he's done a wee on the microphone.
He might well have done. I mean, there's all sorts of things that Boggins may have done. Speaking of Don Letts, last week we were talking about the man, and there was, like, a little tomfoolery about his show. We got a message from Ollie from Kensal Rise, and he says, "So last week I was listening to your podcast on the bus from Ladbroke Grove when you started your Don Letts mini rant. It was at this moment I noticed a very familiar figure sitting next to me on the bus. You guessed it. The Don had sat down right next to me. I couldn't believe it. My initial reaction was to alert him to the coincidence, because that is a massive coincidence. But then Adam got to the part of the story where he explained that the Don was not the most approachable man in the world if you meet him. So I held back. I mean, I'm sure he is approachable. My story was about approaching him at the wrong moment. As you delved further into your story, I sat simmering with indecision about whether or not I should tell Don Letts that the voices in my ears were talking about him. What's more, I started to giggle. At one point, we made eye contact, and I tried to convey all of this overwhelming information into a single look. In retrospect, I may have appeared slightly unhinged. He seemed to twig that something was up, and the fact he was close enough to hear the potential sound leakage from my headphones made me wonder whether the game would soon be up. I managed to hold it together and left the bus at Kensal Rise, kicking myself that I hadn't shared my bizarre coincidence with Mr. Letts, but was delighted nonetheless. Maybe bizarre coincidences could form the basis of a future Text the Nation. Yours, coincidentally, Ollie from Kensal Rise. Thanks for that, Ollie.
Wow, that's super interactive, isn't it?
I mean, what are the chances, though?
What are the chances of that?
What are the chances?
So we should talk about this.
What are the chances? It's not my fault if he sits next to me. It's my problem now. It was a coincidence.
So if we talk about someone now,
yeah,
then maybe one of our listeners will just end up sitting next to them.
I think a good idea for Text the Nation in the future is I am psychic.
Uh-huh.
Do you know, like, amazing coincidences that make you think that you're psychic?
Right.
In the future, wouldn't that be good?
Why don't we set this up for the next live show?
Okay.
My sister, for a while, was convinced that bulbs would burst in, you know, like, just go out in
really?
Rooms when she went in. And she started, like, one afternoon, she came round for Sunday lunch at my family's house, and the bulb went, and she was like, it's happened again. I was like, what do you mean? Bulbs go.
She's it's like, a good subject, isn't it?
Yeah.
My other friend, he likes to try and guess things on television,
mm-hmm.
like what's in the boxes in Deal or No Deal. He just tries to predict things to constantly try and prove that he's psychic. And when he gets it right, he just really goes off on one, like ranting about how powerful his powers are.
All right, this is Text the Nation for the weekend that we get back, i.e. 2 weeks from
now.
Yeah,
I think I am psychic because...
Yeah, so get your messages coming in, Adam and Joe... .6music@bbc.co.uk. That's it for our podcast this week. Don't forget to tune in for the special placeholding fun podcast. There's going to be interesting nuggets in that next week. Don't forget to listen to Collings and Herrin.
And thank you to everybody who emails and texts and communicates. We love all of your emails. But please, if you want to increase the chances of getting yours read out, make them short.
Concision.
A paragraph.
Yeah.
Pithy. Edit them. Punchy.
Exactly.
And then they're more likely to be read. But thank you, everybody, who takes the trouble to write anything.
Yeah,
anyway.
We do sincerely appreciate it. That was a little sincere sign-off for you. Usually it's very glib, but
it's unusual.
Sincere this week. I love you. Bye!
Bye!
If you enjoyed the Adam and Joe podcast, then why not try the John Richardson podcast? Download it now. bbc.co.uk/6music.
Here, boy. Come on, Boggins.
Oh, Boggins, thank God for that.
Ever was.
I'm going to give you a hug, Boggins.
I love you, bruv.